We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkin from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Jerry Hooten, the 2018 FFPC Terminator Tournament overall co-champion and former Best Ball Live Event winner. In this episode, we talk about the changing roles for Damian Harris and Ronald Jones, why he is in the thick of the 2020 Terminator race, some helpful best ball tips, and much more. Hooten's career winnings in the FFPC total more than $80,000. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it supports the podcast channel. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Like me, getting excited to watch Aaron Rodgers throw the ball all over the field, hopefully to the right team, for plenty of touchdowns for my Green Bay Packers. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now, without further ado, here is $80,000 high-stakes fantasy football winner, Jerry Hooten. Coming to you on a, we're recording this Monday night, just so everybody's aware, and we timed it out pretty perfectly. It's halftime of the Cowboys and Cardinals game, and I'm sure much will take place over the next couple of days before you are actually listening to this on Thursday morning. But we're going to do the best we can tonight, and I think we're going to be in good shape because we have on a longtime high-stakes FFPC veteran, a guy who's played in a ton of best balls, former co-champ of the FFPC Terminator competition. It's Jerry Hooten joining us this week. Jerry, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
We let's talk about the main event, because obviously it's at the forefront of a lot of people's minds, that and the Football Guys Players Championship. And I want to specifically talk to you about Robbie Anderson, because you have him on one of your main event teams that's doing quite well. He's been the best wideout that Carolina's had all season. What did you see about Anderson that so many other FFPC drafters didn't and let him slip down draft boards?
Well, actually, kind of started last year. I traded for him in my dynasty leagues late last year, mainly because I knew he was a free agent. He was going to go to move to a different team. I was kind of like hopefully like Green Bay or Philadelphia. But he ended up in Carolina with his old coach. And, you know, it was kind of like a half a roll of the dice, just kind of a hunch. And I thought he was a better player than he'd shown previously and kind of took a shot on him. I wish I had taken more shots on him.
Yeah, no kidding. You and me both. It's so funny because, you know, I love DJ Moore coming into this season, and I drafted him in a fairly good amount of leagues. But the only Robbie Anderson share I have is also, like you, in a dynasty league where, you know, I was prepared to, you know, at cutdown, prepared to move on from him. And then I just had some other guys not work out, and Anderson was the type of guy that, let's keep him around, see what happens. He's been crushing it. Are you worried? You probably own DJ Moore in a few leagues, given how many best balls you're in. Are you worried about his 2020 season, the way that Anderson's playing right now?
I did not take as many best balls as I have. I probably don't have 7-8 teams with DJ Moore on it. I kind of stayed away from him.
So was that because of the Robbie Anderson factor, or did something else play into staying away from him?
Just, you know, you got a new team, new coach, new quarterback, no preseason games, you know, all that. I tried to stay with continuity this year. Took some flyers on some guys I thought, you know, were going to bounce from last year. But just tried to stay with continuity, and Carolina just had a lot of changes, so I just kind of stayed away from it, unless I got McCaffrey with the first pick. I just kind of stayed away from him.
Yeah, and it's too, I mean, like Moore, you did have to pay a premium to get him, and there's certainly a lot of other options going there too, which I'm sure you're happy about, that you did not take DJ Moore in a ton of drafts. Now, you and your nephew, Phil, your previous overall winners, the FFPC Terminator Tournament. You have a lot of really good teams in that contest again this year. What's been the secret in this format that you guys have not only won it, but also look like you're going to have a couple of teams at the end in the whole shebang again in 2020?
Well, hopefully this week doesn't kill us, because our Terminator teams took a hit this week. It's ugly. But there's 20 weeks left. I don't know if it's just, we just seem to have a knack for it, to know, it's really not who you take, it's staying away from the bums. And those guys will kill you. The DJ Moores, the Juju Smiths, those kind of players, we kind of stay away from them, and it's worked out for us.
Yeah, and too, I mean, well, and we're going to get into more best ball conversation too, coming up later in the program too. But that's definitely something I want to pick your brain about for sure, as far as those Terminators go. I mentioned it at the top of the show, you and Phil also run a ton of best ball teams with the FFPC. How close of attention when you're during draft season, Jerry, how close of attention are you paying when you're drafting all these teams, many of them at the same time, to make sure that you don't have too many or too few shares of any players?
Well, I just kind of like go into the season kind of figuring, all right, out of this pool of players, we're going to get more of these two guys or more of these three guys of the pool. As the draft goes on, you move into separate pools, and we kind of concentrate that we want to get more of these guys. And every now and then, if the price is right, we take somebody we really don't like DJ Moore. I mean, if he get in the middle of the fourth round, top of the fifth round, then we take him. But we'd never take him late third, top of the fourth. So, it's value. It's where they fall in the pool.
What's it been like managing teams for so many years with Phil? I mean, how have you guys what's the balance, the yin and the yang that you have there that's been so successful from a financial standpoint that makes you guys a good pair?
Well, God, that's a good question. We very rarely ever disagree. You know, most of the time, one of us, hey, I really like this guy, and it's okay, that's fine, go ahead, take him, and vice versa. It's rarely we ever get butt heads to where we don't disagree. I don't know, it's just because we're family members or it just worked out that way, but it hasn't really been that big of a deal.
And you guys, it's not like 1 or 2 years. I mean, how long have you guys been playing together as co-managers?
6, 7, something like that.
Yeah, and you've developed a chemistry that's clearly worked for sure. Okay, so
two heads have definitely been better than one in this instance.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about Gabriel Davis here because I don't know if you own him in any of your dynasties. I have him in a couple of mine. And then you used him in the Chiefs-Bills game in Week 6, and you had D'Ernest Johnson, you had Tyler Higbee on the bench. I'm curious. Why you like Davis in this game against the Chiefs, and why you sort of like him in general to have him rostered in 2020?
I have a what I call my rookie guy. It's a report this individual puts out. I don't know if you want me to say his name or not, but
You can.
Matt Waldman.
And, okay, there you go.
I read his report every year and try to find some lower end guys that he kind of likes that the masses don't like. And Gabriel was on one of his guys. And then I try to listen in the camp and try to get little bits and pieces of, this guy's, this rookie's doing good in camp. This guy's flashing, looking good. And then after a game or two, I started accumulating him on dynasty teams. And the one game he was played against the Rams, it was fourth down. The game was on the line. They threw the ball to him and he got that pass interference call, which was really an ugly call because I'm a Rams fan. So, you just kind of keep your ear open and try to rotate these guys in. He hasn't really done a whole lot, but I love him for Dynasty.
Yeah, and he's it was such a historic year. And I know we kind of throw that term around a little bit, but it was such a historic year for receivers in the draft this year. For the fact that Gabriel Davis is a fourth round, if it would have been a more normal year, for lack of a better term, for receivers, you wonder how high he could have gone. Maybe he would have been a second round pick. I don't know. But certainly he has flashed. No question. So, as long as I know you're a Rams fan now, what are you looking at as far as the backfield goes? I mean, is it Henderson? Is it Brown? I think we're pretty much in agreement. Well, I shouldn't say we're in agreement because I haven't asked you about this yet, but I think Akers seems to be the unanimous guy that everybody believes will be the guy at some point. As far as fantasy right now, Jerry, who's the guy to own for the Rams, and how do you see that backfield shaking out for the remainder of the season?
I would treat it like the New England backfield. Who the hell knows?
Just stay away in general.
Yeah, I mean, I got way too many Cam Akers and best balls. I don't know if it was computer homerism but I missed that one. So far this year, he's not been very good. But I would assume as season goes on, he would start to prevail. But rookies in these, I try to stay away from rookies in best ball drafts. I will never draft a rookie tight end. I don't even like drafting rookie wide receivers. I think in best balls, the more you can stay away from the rookies, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, and two, I think that it's their price gets driven up because they're the mystery box, right? You know, fantasy owners want to take the guy who, because he has not played a snap in the NFL, he has that unknown ceiling. And sometimes that unknown ceiling, as you will probably agree, that it pushes those guys up in drafts, and it turns the veterans, quite frankly, into a value. Because nobody's necessarily excited about drafting the veterans, But those are sometimes the keys to unlocking best ball championships, right, Jerry?
Yes, I said earlier, it's staying away. Well, I use the word bums. I probably shouldn't use that word. Staying away from the lower producers. The people who are taking CEH at 105, 106, 106, 107, ahead of Joe Mixon, ahead of Aaron Jones, ahead of Davante Adams. I mean, you're taking one. Look what the level that rookie would have to produce at to be equivalent to those guys. I think that's just way too much risk.
Damian Harris, he had a good game this past week. How do you see his role changing, if it changes at all, once the Patriots end up taking Sony Michel off of injured reserve and bringing him back into that backfield?
Well, I took some shots on him because coming out of camp, you heard that he was the guy. So when everybody was healthy, and then he hurt his pinky or something on his hand, and he went on IR for 3 weeks. But I think that when he comes back, he's going to be the main ball carrier, but it's the New England backfield. So what does that really mean?
All right. Yeah. Well, so let's just touch on that real quick. So for best ball, those Patriots running backs make a lot more sense than they would for the main event or for the Football Guys Players Championship, right?
Absolutely. At the end of a lot of drafts, I took Burkhead. I love taking Rex Burkhead in the 26th, 27th round. That's, because if he does go belly up, you didn't waste a pick. But if you got to take, you're taking Sony Michel in the 8th round, that's risky.
Ronald, as long as we're talking about backfields here, Ronald Jones has, I don't know if he still does, but I know in weeks 4 and 5, he led the NFL in rushing over those two weeks because of no Leonard Fournette. And now Fournette will be coming back, we would assume, at some point. But Jones is really entrenched as the starter. Had another great game against Green Bay this past week in week 6. How likely is it, Jerry, that they end up doing a 50-50 split, roughly a 50-50 split for touches when Fournette is back? Or is this a case where Fournette's sort of, the handcuff at this point, the guy that's, behind the guy, and it's Jones's job to lose?
I think it's Jones's job to lose. Now, obviously, they'll rotate him in, a series here and a series there. But I think unless Ronald Jones, misses a block and gets Tom Brady blown up or fumbles, I think the job's his.
Yeah, and it's weird because Tampa has always, seemingly ever since they drafted Ronald Jones, they've been looking for other alternatives. They're playing Peyton Barber over him a ton. They drafted Keyshawn Vaughn. They get not only Leonard Fournette, but LeSean McCoy as well. Just always seeming to have their eye wandering, for something better. And they might have had the best guy all along there in Ronald Jones. Do you own him in Dynasty anywhere, Jerry?
I believe I have him on one or two teams. One I'm for sure, but I think I got him on a best ball dynasty and a regular standard one.
Do you, and I know you manage a lot of teams, but I'm just curious, as far as dynasty goes, do you find yourself actively shopping players during the season to try to cash in on value? Or is it just, is that just something that has not been super fruitful in the past and you save that for the off season?
I probably don't trade as much as most people do for, I don't know, whatever reason, being a conservative, I guess. I just, I did make a pretty good trade here the other day that's worked out, but I got rid of Ertz. I finally got rid of that old guy. So I put Ertz and, Ertz and Odell and got Tyreek Hill back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like that, especially for Dynasty. And it's interesting too, because now we know Ertz is going to miss some time. Goddard's, I don't know when he can come back or when he is coming back. We know he's banged up. Obviously, we're still waiting for the return of DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey. Travis Fulgham is looking like a thing. Two consecutive weeks with a lot of targets from Carson Wentz. Did you end up getting Fulgham on any of your squads in the waiver wire this past week?
Unfortunately, no. I didn't even put a bid in for him. But this is the not-for-long league, the NFL. And we'll see. Once you show up on film, defenses will start rolling coverage over to you. And we'll see what he's made of here in the next couple of weeks to see if he's a real NFL player or a flash in the pan, because he's now on the scene and let's see what he can do with coverage.
Yeah. And the other guy too, that I didn't mention, Jalen Reagor, is going to be coming back at some point as well. So once Philly gets healthy, we'll see what happens. But, you know, at the same time, you know, Jackson may not be long for that team. Alshon Jeffrey may not be. Yeah. I mean, so you're looking at potentially some opportunity there, and it doesn't seem like Philly wants, to be in the Zach Ertz business long term as well, as we found out at the start of the season. Switching to that Sunday night game this past week, Jerry, Jimmy Garoppolo actually got back on track after being benched in week 5. And I know he was dealing with the ankle thing, but he was also playing pretty badly. Did his performance against the Rams on Sunday night make you feel about starting some of these other Niners pass catchers, specifically Deebo Samuel, who seems to be, you know, rounding into form? He gets 6 for 66 and a touchdown that game. Does Garoppolo give you the warm fuzzies now and feel good about Deebo Samuel in your starting lineups?
Well, me and warm fuzzy feelings about the 49ers don't go hand in hand. More like I wish they'd rot in hell. But back to the question. I think Deebo is just a baller. I don't really care who the quarterback is. Garoppolo can date as many porn stars as he wants. I don't think that's going to affect Deebo much.
Yeah, and Ayuk too. I mean, obviously he didn't have the huge game that Samuel did, but certainly Garoppolo looking good is you know, and the thing is too, it's like you said, like I don't want to say Samuel's quarterback proof, like whoever's throwing to him does make a difference. But he is, you know, one of the most talented receivers in that division for sure. Okay, so one of the things that we're going to have the opportunity to do this week here, Jerry, and this is something that we don't normally do on this show because we don't really have the opportunity to, when we're in the midst of the season, you know, we're coming up on week 7 here. We don't normally talk a whole lot about draft strategy. But you being a best ball savant, best ball expert, this would be a good opportunity for us to talk to you and give the listeners sort of an idea of what it takes to be winning all these leagues, these best ball leagues that you draft prior to the season. First question is, how did doing all those best balls in the drafting season sort of prepare you for those managed teams, those main events, the football guys teams? How does that prep you, to make sure you're at, your drafting peak and your team management peak?
Well, as many drafts as you can do, you just get experience. You realize how certain drafts kind of fall. You learn not to chase. If you don't get the running backs you want, you just don't grab the next two available just because they're the next two available. You just learn to manage your expectations, and you just try to piece a team together as best as you can. And the more drafts you do, the better off you're going to be. You're just going to have more knowledge. Just like poker players. The best poker players of today are the ones who went on the internet and they played 6-7 hands, you know, at a time, and they play thousands and thousands and thousands of hands of poker. You're going to be better at it. And the same thing is drafting football. The more drafts you do, the better you're going to be at drafting.
And certainly experience. And I think, and too, wouldn't you say, especially with the FFPC, given the starting lineup, the two running backs, the two receivers, the two flexes, the tight end. Don't you think that, you know, you get more of a variance on FFPC drafts? Like you'll see some crazier, some wilder things and a huge, you know, a much bigger, different deviation in the types of drafts you see, right?
Absolutely. That was one of the reasons why we play at FFPC is because of the two flex system. I like that. Yeah, you can play, four running backs. You can play three tight ends. So when you're putting your team together early, if there's a tight end that falls to you, even though you already have one, well, you can pick them up because you got plenty of room to play them. You can't let, you know, you don't have to let that value fall because you got nowhere to put them.
When you're drafting in, and I know we touched on this earlier, when you're drafting in a Terminator tournament or just like, you know, the 28 best ball, 28 round best ball draft, did you do any slims this year with the FFPC adding those slim best balls? Did you do any of those, Jerry?
Of course, but I did way more 28 rounders than I did slims.
What did you think of the slims? Just offhand, what did you think about those drafts? How do they compare to the 28 rounders?
I like the 28 rounders better simply because I think I have a pretty good knowledge of the depth of talent in the league, and it's just more to my advantage to go deeper. But as far as doing them, I mean, that was fine. I just think the strategy in a 28 rounder is way more. It's more intense. Even though, you know, the kickers and defenses, this is what a lot of people don't understand about best ball. You have 16 weeks, you have 10 scoring spots. That's 160 scoring opportunities in a season. That's all you get. 16 of those are defenses, 16 of those are kickers. So out of your 160 scoring opportunities, 32 of them are defenses and kickers. They're important. You slush those away, you're throwing away scoring opportunities.
And the other thing too is, you know, you don't have to worry about that in slims, obviously, with right. kickers and defenses, but you're right. I mean, sometimes, you know, people don't look at the bye weeks. They don't look at the matchups and what have you. And they just kind of just draft whoever. And sometimes they'll luck into it. But I think you're right. I think it's the people who have the experience, the people who look a little bit deeper, you know, beneath just scratching the surface. Those are the ones that really get a lot of success in those best ball drafts for sure. Getting back to my question, when you're drafting one of those or a Terminator, how does your player valuation change from that type of format? I think we touched on this a little bit with the Patriots running backs earlier. How does your player valuation change when you're talking about those 28 rounders, set it and forget it, in comparison to a football guy's draft or a main event draft?
You can't. Like I said, I try to stay away from rookies. I'll take a rookie running backs, but I will never draft a rookie tight. You see a rookie tight end on my team, it's Philip drafted him, not me.
and that's been, I mean, it's been pretty safe, right? I mean, it's pretty rare where you have a rookie tight end that's making waves, that's becoming a huge fantasy asset. It's rare.
It's absolutely, you're better off taking another kicker.
Right, yeah.
I mean, and rookie wide receivers are rough, even though this year they're doing pretty good. But a lot of years, they don't show up either. It's, you got 28 spots, and you need 28 spots banging every week for you, because every point counts. It's, you mentioned, and I believe, thank you for bringing it up, that we won the Terminator overall by 1.65 points.
Wow. Just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, so every position counts. Everybody, hang on 1 second. Hang on. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. But you're right. I mean, everything does count. You got to make sure that you're squeezing as many points out as you possibly can, in that format. How do you guys decide, how to which player to drop every week for the Terminator? Does that ever get contentious, or are you guys mostly in agreement of who you're going to be dropping?
That's fascinating. You'd think that it wouldn't be that hard. Obviously, some weeks are not. You know, guy goes on IR, you get rid of him. But you'd be surprised how hard that is sometimes to try to figure out which guy to drop. I dropped Daryl Williams in one of the Terminator this last week, and then, you know, and then he scores a touchdown this week. So,
right, yeah.
You know, it's tough. It's it's crucial. You can't, you just, it's tough. We have our biggest argument, or not arguments, our biggest discussion on who the hell to drop more than we do who we're going to draft.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, where it's like, you know, if you pick the wrong guy at the wrong portion of the season, I mean, that can tank your team as weird as that sounds, it can tank your, and I've seen it happen too. I'm sure you've seen it happen, with either your teams or some of the guys that you compete against too. I think you're totally right on that. And it certainly makes for some white knuckle moments before you click on that drop button to whoever it's going to be that week. Jerry, final question here.
Just for an example, 3 weeks ago, we dropped Burkhead in a league and he goes off and has 30 points.
So frustrating.
We kept them in a couple, but we dropped them in one. You know, it was kind of an eeny, meeny, miny, moe. All right, we'll keep them in these two, but we'll get rid of them in this one. Boom, 30 points. And you'll never get that. You'll never recover from that.
When you're drafting these Terminators and when you get to the final few rounds, Do you ever just draft flyers where you know, like, okay, if this guy doesn't hit, he'll be one of our first drops this year. Does that line of thinking ever come into play?
I try to draft as many players who have roles in their offense, dedicated roles, third down backs. I try to stay away from handcuffs because you handcuff somebody. Say you take Tony Pollard, you handcuff him with Elliott because you took him earlier. Well, how many weeks are you going to take those zeros or 1 or 2 points before you got to cut them? Because you just can't stay with him on your roster. You draft 26 guys who all have a role.
And that's the thing too, is like, you know, if you're drafting a handcuff, well, if your guy goes down, well, sure, that helps you out. But in order to win a national contest, like you guys did with the Terminator, handcuffing might not be the best idea. You know, you sort of got to take some chances here and there, and maybe, you know, going for the most explosive team is the way to go, and making sure that you get guys with those defined roles that are just, that are something beyond a handcuff, where you can get some guaranteed points every single week. Final question for you tonight, Jerry, the roster construction in a best ball league. And I know it's totally different for a slim, but, I'm just kind of curious if you and Phil have sort of a set number in mind as far as, how many quarterbacks you want, how many tight ends, kickers, defenses, that type of thing. And do you tweak that? Do you vary it up at all, in those drafts where maybe you go a little bit lighter on quarterback here, a little bit more heavy on tight end there? How do those discussions go? How do you guys normally decide that?
Well, we always take three quarterbacks. Occasionally this year, because of COVID, I took a fourth one, but mostly basically we take three quarter. Even if we take Mahomes early or somebody else, we always end up with three kickers, two defenses, five tight ends, and then basically break the other ones up. I draft running backs early and often. I have my 6-7 running backs before the 15th round. Because I think taking a running back after the round 20, if you look on a draft board and you look at all the running backs that are taken after, let's say, round 19 to 28, there's probably only two or three of them that are worth a damn. So, you know, you can't take them down there. You just wait. You're rolling the dice, hoping for a miracle. And in the meantime, the guy's getting you zeros every week until the miracle happens. So, like I said, I get 28 players that all have routines, and I stack the top half of the draft with running backs because you can't pick them up. You can only go start with the 7 or 8 you started with. So get them early, get them often, and worry about your wide receivers and your fourth, fifth tight end later on in life.
I know I said that was the final question. I do have one more that you made me think of. I saw this year more than ever, in best ball leagues. I've seen some teams, not all teams, I mean, just a few, waiting until round 11 to draft their first receiver. Sometimes round 13, sometimes even round 15 to take their first receiver. Do you ever find yourself waiting on receiver that long in any of your drafts, given how much you like to get all those running backs early?
The big dog that I'm leading in right now, their team one did that, and they're in about fifth or sixth spot. It's too tough. That's too much. You can sneak a wide receiver or two in the top 10 picks. You don't need to start. I've seen guys start with four tight ends, four straight quarterbacks. You see some goofy stuff in best ball.
Right. Yes, you do. Yes, you do, for sure.
A lot of people love to do the Kelsey George Kittle double. You'd never see that in a redraft.
But I remember back in the day, it was the JerMichael Finley Vernon Davis start. You know, like that was the tight end start du jour. And then now it's Kelsey and Kittle. It's been Kelsey and Ertz before. It's crazy, man.
I've won that way. You can win that way, but you better. I've never won a team with bad running backs, though. I've won with ugly looking wide receivers. I've won with ugly looking quarterbacks, but I've never won a big ball league with ugly running backs.
Yeah. And it's just like you said too. I mean, like as long as you're avoiding those lower producing players, you got a shot, and you can do it with, and I'm sure you've won with some ugly looking quarterbacks too, right?
I won with everything ugly except running backs. If you got
except running backs.
5-6 crappy running backs on your team, you're dead.
Jerry, this was so much fun talking best ball with you in the middle. It's mid-October. We're talking best ball draft strategy. I love it. I absolutely love it. And a good change of pace from what we're normally doing on these podcasts. I want to thank you so much for carving out some time for the show this week. Best of luck to you coming, well, for the rest of week 6 here. And then for week 7 as well in all your leagues going forward. Thanks so much, dude, and we'll talk to you again soon.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.